NYJ File, the Ultimate Jets Podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome to another edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you for being here. Week one in the National Football League is in the books. We now get a chance to look back at week one and also start to preview week two. We will do so by checking in on the team, figuring out the very latest injuries, expectations, the highs and lows of week one. Then we'll go around the NFL. We'll do that with the NFL Network's Brian Billick. And then in overtime this week, speaking of the NFL Network, one of the newest faces there on the NFL Network, Mike Garafolo, will join me for overtime, a six-pack of questions. It all gets started right now on the NFL Files.
The Big Interview.
It is time to talk Jets, and we go to News 12 Long Island. We bring in Jamie Stewart. You find him on Twitter at N12, Jamie Stewart. And Jamie, let's start here. Obviously, a frustrating loss, not just because of the missed kick, but just overall some missed opportunities. Before we dive into the specifics, what's your overall takeaway from the 23-22 loss to the Bengals in week one?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. I was there. The Jets were even, if not outplayed, the Bengals for most of the game. But they missed an extra point. They missed a 22-yard field goal. It was blocked. They had a couple of fourth and goals, fourth and one, that they elected for field goals. Missed red zone opportunities. And they lose by a point. I think the Jets are a good team. They have talent on both sides of the ball. They have some deficiencies. But when you look at their schedule, it's the toughest schedule in the league for the first 6 weeks. And this was a game that they really needed to win when you look down the road at the other games they're going to have. So they have a quick turnaround Thursday in Buffalo, so they need to get that one.
Well, and I'll tell you what, you talk about the tough schedule the first 6 weeks. I mean, I think the fact that they go from week two through week nine with only two games at home, and I think it goes even beyond, Jamie, the first 6 weeks. I mean, it's the Jets have a brutal schedule. You know, I think this was one that they may look back on in a few weeks and wish that they had back just because of how difficult that schedule is. What did they do to tick off the scheduling gods? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I don't know what it is. I mean, they had an easy schedule last year, and that's part of the reason they went 10-6. They took advantage of some weak teams, and they played well. But, yeah, I mean, when you look at home for the Bengals, tough game, 3 days basically later at Buffalo on Thursday night, at Kansas City, which you never can chalk up as a W, home for the Seahawks, at Pittsburgh, at Arizona on Monday night, I mean, that's about as bad as it can get. I mean, if you told Jets fans through the first six games, I'll give you 3-3, they all would have signed up for it.
Oh, heck yeah.
I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that they're going to be the best 0-6 team in history.
Yeah, they're definitely they could be set up for it. You're exactly right. Hey, let's talk about Ryan Fitzpatrick's performance here for a second. And I know you even tweeted about this over the course of the game and even afterwards. You have 35 attempts and only wind up with 189 yards. What do you chalk that up to? Was it the defense? Was it the missed opportunities? Did Fitzpatrick just have a bad day? I mean, how do you chalk up the 35 attempts but only winding up with 189 yards?
And basically 10 yards of completion. I was there, like I said, and it's very apparent what Fitzpatrick is. He's, I'd say, an average quarterback where his teammates love him. He can make some good plays. That's about it. I mean, the Bengals have a very good defense. They realized early on that Fitzpatrick is not going to stretch that defense by throwing deep, and the Jets don't have anyone that can really stretch the defense. They have a Devin Smith, the wide receiver for last year, speedster from Ohio State. He's hurt, so he's not playing for the first month or so of the season. So Brandon Marshall is very good for, you know, 15 to 20, 25 yards. Same thing with Decker. Quincy Enunwa, same thing. They are not a vertical team. And Fitzpatrick, to counter that, is not extremely accurate. So if he's throwing only 10-yard, 15-yard balls, he's got to have a better completion percentage than, you know, just half. You know, he's not taking a lot of chances here. They've got to complete them. So Fitzpatrick didn't have a great day. Certainly played well enough for them to win. Didn't have a killer turnover or anything like that. But you know, he's better than what they have, but against good defenses, I have yet to see him put together a very good performance. He had a great year last year, and like I said, they had an easy schedule. When push came to come to shove against Buffalo last year, a good defense, he wilted. And yesterday, he didn't play horribly, but you can't put the game on his shoulders and expect him to win it, because it's not going to happen.
Was the bright spot for Jets fans the fact that it looked like Matt Forte still has gas left in the tank, 22 carries, 96 yards on the ground to go along with five catches?
Yeah, you know, I was surprised that they force-fed him so much because, as you know, Bilal Powell was a pretty significant factor last year. One thing I can think of is because they have a quick turnaround, I think you're going to see less of Forte in Buffalo and more of Powell, who can do very similar things. But to your point, Forte, he looked great. He looked great. Nearly 100 yards rushing, very good out of the backfield. Fitzpatrick clearly loves him as a security blanket. The Jets have an efficient offense, but they're an east-to-west type of offense. And it almost reminds me, Jets fans, if you're listening, of the Brian Schottenheimer era. I mean, it takes 14 plays to get down the field, which
right.
is not easy.
Was one of the other bright spots for you, Jamie, as we look at this week one loss to the Bengals, and you know, sometimes you try to find the silver lining, especially with the schedule that you and I were just talking about, but based off of the overall performance, the fact that Fitzpatrick was only sacked once in the game, is that another spot where you can say, okay, maybe this offensive line is in position to do some good things?
Yeah, definitely. I think going into the season and into the game, if you would talk to Jets fans and ask what their big concern is, offensive line is a big one because it's a question mark. Is the right side of the line, they're basically unfamiliar guys and guys that haven't really played much in the NFL. Bruno Giacomini was their right tackle, and he's got a back injury, so he's out. So, yeah, the offensive line was very good. It opened holes for Forte. It kept Fitzpatrick sturdy. The line was good, and the defensive line was great.
You talked about Quincy from the receiving standpoint a minute ago. For folks that have not become familiar with him, what's his strengths? What is it that made it so that Fitzpatrick was looking at him a total of 8 targets for 7 catches?
Did you say Quincy? I couldn't hear you.
Yeah, Quincy.
Yeah, Quincy Enunwa. You know, he was a guy that Chan Gailey loves, and he came on the scene last year. And he's very athletic. He's like a hybrid type of guy and really came out because the Jets don't have a tight end. Jason Morrow was their tight end, a high draft pick. He was hurt all of last year. So they brought Enunwa in from Nebraska, and he's very, very physical, helps in the run game and the pass game. Very good hands, made some big plays last year, helped the Jets beat the Patriots in overtime. And now that Morrow is cut, you know, he's a very big target, and he's a tough matchup for defenses because he's too fast for linebackers and he's too physical for corners. And when he's on the field, you don't know if they're running or passing because he can do both.
Obviously, going forward, Jamie, there's no way that the Jets can find success if you've got Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker only combining for 5 catches out of 15 times that they were targeted. You know, I know we talked a little bit about what Fitzpatrick needs to do differently. Is there anything that those two need to be do differently, or is this entirely on Fitz's shoulders?
You know, I don't know if I don't think the Bengals did anything great to take them away, but I don't think it's fair to not give the Cincinnati defense credit for taking them away. Decker did have a touchdown. Marshall had a target in the end zone, a couple targets. One of the plays is Patrick threw to Marshall was incomplete. Decker was wide open for a touchdown, and he didn't see him. But you're right. I mean, first of all, it should be more targets than that. And I think Cincinnati basically, you know, draped their defense over Brandon Marshall and said anybody but him. But Brandon Marshall's got to make some plays. And he seemed, I don't know, he bears watching a little bit. He seemed a little discouraged yesterday. He was kind of short with the media, nothing crazy yet, not making any headlines. But I don't know if he wanted the ball more. He probably did. All wide receivers do. We'll see what happens Thursday in Buffalo because he was a beast last year. And, you know, he needs to do a better job of getting open. And then he finally gets open. When the Jets are down 1, the final minute, still they have the ball with a minute to go, no timeouts. he's wide open at the 50-yard line with about 45 seconds left, and he drops it. Yep. If he had caught that ball, the Jets spike it, and they're in business with about 35 seconds left, down one.
On the other side of the ball, the other conversation since the game was the fact that A.J. Green got the best of Darrell Revis. Jamie, is that just a one-game thing against a really good wide receiver, or is Darrell Revis at the age of 31 starting to show a little wear and tear?
Well, it's both. I mean, he clearly is showing wear and tear. I'm not going to push the panic button like everyone else seems to be doing and saying Revis is done, switch him to safety. I think it's going to happen eventually, but I think it's just a matter of Green is a monster. And first of all, he had a 50-yard touchdown in which the Jets had a communication breakdown, and Revis was supposed to have safety help and did not. Other than that, Green, you know, he beat Revis up and down the field, and he also made some amazing one-handed scooping catches where Revis was right there. So Revis is not locked down Revis Island anymore. He's still, in my opinion, a top 10 cornerback, but there's no disguising the fact that, you know, he got beat a lot. But I think it's more so the fact that Green is just a top five receiver in the league.
You find him on Twitter at N12, Jamie Stewart from News 12 in Long Island. Jamie Stewart, our guest to talk Jets. Jamie, really appreciate the time. And as you said, a short week, so we get back to work really quickly with the matchup coming up on Thursday night. Thanks for the time.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
That's Jamie Stewart. Now up next, the coach, Brian Billick. Stick around.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that each week with the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. And as he is each week, he's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got the SeatGeek app on your mobile device or that you're visiting SeatGeek.com. Make sure you, your family, your friends are always getting the best deal on tickets, and you do that with the SeatGeek app. Coach, let's start here with the Monday night game. A lot of people surprised not only for Jared Goff not to start, but not even active. I know I'm asking you to speculate, but why do you believe the number one overall pick is not out there for the Rams, given how inept their offense looked overall?
Well, you can only assume that Jeff Fisher doesn't think he's ready. I mean, let's go back to Jeff's history. When they drafted Steve McNair back in the 90s, he didn't actually start until his third season. They carried him along, felt like they needed to nurture him. They had two losing seasons leading up to that, and then he finally found his way into the starting lineup. If Jared Goff is not better than Case Keenum, they got a real problem, because obviously they were betting on playing great defense, running the ball, which they didn't last night. Todd Gurley only had 47 yards in 17 carries. And Case Keenum, you know, maybe you can play that formula where he was only 17 to 35, but he had two interceptions. If you're going to play that play great defense, run the ball formula, you got to run the ball, can't turn it over. So if they're not going to play a lot better than that, you got to put Jared Goff in just to get the experience.
Coach, is the Niners' defense improved, or was this just a matter of the Rams being that bad?
Well, we're going to find out. We don't know, because the Rams' offense was basically so inept. So, we're going to have to see how it pans out. It's likely they're a little bit better than we all thought they were going to be, but their roster, when you look at it, you have some question marks. Notwithstanding even the offensive side, obviously what Chip Kelly's doing, they have a lot of confidence. They obviously look pretty good. But we're going to find out, particularly this week, when they're going to play the Seattle Seahawks. We're going to find out more about L.A. and the fact that they play the Seattle Seahawks. In terms of San Francisco 49ers, the next step for them, obviously, is to, can they indeed go on the road? And it's a tall task, because they're going across the country to the Carolina Panthers. Now you're going to see a legitimate run offense. You're going to see maybe the best quarterback or the best athlete in the game in Cam Newton, and a very, very good Carolina defense. So it's going to be a test for the 49ers. They go across the country and put that kind of performance together against Carolina, then we're all going to say, nope, we were all kind of wrong. This team's pretty good.
For some people, looking at the AFC, the Steelers were a bit of a sleeper pick for some experts, Coach. Did you see that out of them in their Monday night contest against Washington? Could they contend in the AFC?
Well, I've on record, I had Pittsburgh down as my Super Bowl team. I think they could be, if, and then this is a huge if they can stay healthy, and that's the key. And we're talking about Ben Roethlisberger, obviously Antonio Brown, that offensive line, which is healthy and looks spectacular. You know, yeah, Le'Veon Bell's not there, but D'Angelo Williams, let's remember last year he cranked off 127 yards in the opener as well. So D'Angelo Williams is a good, physical, you know, Pittsburgh Steeler type of runner that they got to love doing, you know, seeing what he's doing for them. And defensively, I think they're improved. They're healthy, although you see Ryan Shazier may be hurt. I go back to the injury situation. Of course, that's true of any team. But they were obviously spectacular. Washington's suspect on defense, but I still feel like Pittsburgh is the team to beat in the AFC. They too, okay? Now you got to follow up with it because you've got a Cincinnati team coming into town that looked pretty good, and it's open.
When we look at the AFC, Coach, and you know this as well as anyone, you can't bet against Bill Belichick. There were those that said if the Patriots could go through their first four games without Tom Brady and be 2-2, that everybody would be happy. But based on how they performed against Arizona, is it out of the realm of possibilities that they might be 3-1 or even 4-0 by the time Brady comes back?
Yeah, and I was one of them on our show, Game Day First for the NFL Network. We were talking about it, and I believe all of us picked Arizona to win, and to a man, we said, but we're nervous about it, because anytime you pick against the Patriots and Belichick, and particularly a Brady-less Belichick, you have a little bit of confidence. They come back and bite you every time. So, no, this bodes well for them. You know, for them, they don't look at it that way, and he's the master at one game at a time. They got Miami coming to town, so it's a divisional game, which is important for them. But I'd be surprised if anybody picks the Patriots to lose to Miami at home.
Speaking of Miami, they went on the road in really just a defensive slugfest there against Seattle. What did you see out of the Dolphins? And also, Coach, what did you see out of Seattle?
Well, and that I was impressed with that. I mean, that's a tough place to go. We talked last week about the value I put on the ability to go on the road and win, particularly in an opener, and particularly when you're talking about Miami going to Seattle. They'd been better off going to London. It would be an easier trip for them. That's a tough slot. The defense was impressive. I think it was an example of Russell Wilson this year. I think it's going to have to be finally a 500-plus throw quarterback. He's been under that his first few years because they haven't had to do more than that. Play great defense, run the ball. Not that they're not going to continue to play great defense. They ran the ball okay, but Russell Wilson threw the ball 43 times. And I think we're going to see more of that this year because they're going to need for him to throw the ball in order to get the win.
We know it was against the Cleveland Browns, but at the same time, Carson Wentz came out, a guy that just a few weeks ago, Coach, wasn't even expected to start because Sam Bradford was there, and he wound up with 278 yards, a couple of touchdowns. What did you think of the rookie's performance?
Yeah, very impressive. I mean, particularly for a rookie, you just want to see, are they overwhelmed? Do they look like they can function? And both he and Dak Prescott played very, very well. It was interesting to watch them. It was the same game plan. Both opened up with a lot of boots and outside the pocket, you know, to settle them down, make it an easy read, and then eventually evolved where they had to throw more from the pocket. Now, and it's good for their development. I don't know that you want a rookie throwing the ball 37 times a game like Wentz did, or 45 times like Dak Prescott. But from a development standpoint, because that puts them on a 600-throw season, which would be great for their development as a quarterback, but in terms of winning games and that profile, that would be a steep curve for these rookies. But I tell you what, they looked like they were up to it. Where you saw it was down on third down. Both struggled a little bit in third down in those critical areas, although Carson Wentz in the red zone looked pretty good. You had to be pleased, even though, of course, Dallas lost. You had to be pleased, both teams, with the starts of their rookies, Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz.
Kansas City Chiefs pull off the biggest comeback for them in 56 years with their franchise. Is this a legit AFC West contender? I would assume so, based on what we've seen out of Andy Reid and Alex Smith managing the game.
Oh, absolutely. And it was who didn't play for them that's significant, that they all but at home could come back that way. That'll give them a lot of confidence. Now, obviously, Denver looks to be very solid. Huge win by the Oakland Raiders in New Orleans. They're going to be a factor as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think this is going to be a very tight division. But certainly that bodes well for Kansas City, if nothing else, give them the confidence to know, yeah, even without Jamaal Charles and some of the other players we didn't have there, we're a pretty good football team.
You just brought up the Raiders, and it's been an interesting conversation in looking at Oakland, because there were those that have criticized their opening game, saying, well, wait, this was supposed to be a team that was extremely strong on defense, and here they gave up 34 points. But the counter to that, coach, is, well, just about everybody gives up at least 30 points facing Drew Brees.
Yeah, if you're going to dismiss anybody, everybody that gives up a lot of points and a lot of yards, Drew Brees, the New Orleans Saints, at home in that dome, you can, you know, check off pretty much the entire league. You know, this guy's pretty good. I was very impressed with Oakland's ability to go on the road in one of the toughest places to play of all football, particularly in the opener, and to do it in the way they did, to come back the way they did, to go for it on two-point conversion twice and to get it. That bodes very well for that team, or resiliency on that team. And, yeah, certainly some things, the big plays they're going to have to cut down on. I know that was disappointing for Ken Norton Jr. And his defense, but they're not the Lone Ranger in that regard when it comes to New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints defense continues. They're going to have a tough time this year because Drew Brees and Sean Payton know once again they got to score a minimum of 30 points a game or they got no chance.
Takes a lot of guts to do what Coach Jack Del Rio did at the end of the game. Coach, do you think you could have done the same thing if you were coaching?
Well, I've told in a lot of interviews that I'm doing talk about, you typically, particularly going on the road, you'll get with the staff and say, okay, guys, what's our mentality going to be at the end of the game? We've got to go for two. I mean, you put that down specifically at what do you guys think? It's different at home than it is possibly on the road. And go through the mindset of Jack Del Rio. Okay, I'm going to take a 50-50 chance of getting a two-point play. Or what are my odds if I go into overtime in New Orleans on the road that late in the game against that crowd and, oh, by the way, against the Hall of Famer like Drew Brees? I kind of like my odds with the two-point play rather than putting it in Drew Brees' hand.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. We say it every week. If you spend 10, 15 minutes with the coach, you're a smarter football fan. He's brought to us every week here on the NFL Files podcast by SeatGeek. Make sure you've downloaded the SeatGeek app or visited SeatGeek.com. It's a great way for you to make sure if you're getting tickets to a sporting event or a concert that you're getting the absolute best deal for you and your friends. That's the SeatGeek app. Coach, appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
Overtime.
For Overtime on the NFL Files, Mike Garofolo from NFL Network. First of all, Mike, congratulations on making the jump to NFL Network. We've got a six-pack of questions for you, rapid-fire style. Let's start here. After seeing what happened with Jack Del Rio, are we going to see more coaches go for two?
I don't think so. I think a lot of them are still conservative by nature, and Jack Del Rio is a more forward-thinking coach and has been for a while, so it doesn't shock me that he's the guy, and you know, there is an old adage, you play for the win on the road, you play for the tie at home, so maybe the situation, you know, bared out for that one, and the momentum that they had at the time. I just don't see that being something that all of a sudden coaches are going to start doing, because the minute they fail, they're going to be called upon as bozos.
All right, question number two in the six-pack. For you, the biggest surprise of week one?
Probably the Detroit Lions. You know, I went up there and I heard all that positive talk about their offense and how they wouldn't miss Calvin Johnson, and everything I heard was that this offense actually, not that they'd be better off without Calvin Johnson, but for this offense, the way that they want to spread the ball around, nothing really runs through one person, so that they'd be able to kind of move that ball around. And you hear that and you go, yeah, but you're going to be without Calvin Johnson, so how is that possible? Well, you saw on display. Now, that's not the best defense they're going to face all year. Maybe one of the worst, as a matter of fact. So they're going to have to continue to prove that. But to me, that was a surprise they were able to pull that one off.
All right, Mike, question number three. Does Larry Fitzgerald actually have a secret fountain of youth? And if so, how do you and I get some of it?
He is amazing. And it's all about how he takes care of his body and his dedication to the game. And it is up there with some of the greats of all time. And I don't know if this is going to be his last season. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what kind of success the Cardinals have and whether he thinks this team could, you know, have more success a year from now. I don't think that decision's been made yet. I think it's a possibility, but at the very least, I think he could absolutely continue to play at a high level for beyond this season.
It's overtime on the NFL Files. Mike Garofolo from NFL Network with me. Follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, question number four, true or false, the Patriots will go 4-0 with Jimmy Garoppolo?
I'll go true. Yeah, just because they've got three more home games here, and then they catch Houston on a short week on the Thursday night game at home. So, I think it's a possibility, and sure, I'll ride with my somewhat similar namesake, Jimmy.
There you go. All right, question number five for you. Based on what you saw in week one, who wins the NFC East?
I'm still going Redskins, just because I didn't expect anybody to run away with it. I still don't. I think that's a terrific team that they played. I'm not going to overreact to that one. I do think that there are holes on that roster. I think there's things that they need to patch up, but I'm not going to overreact to that one. There's going to be the opposite of overreaction Monday, even though it's beyond Monday, but it's going to be the opposite of that, because I still believe that they're going to be the team that winds up coming out on top.
Mike Garofolo with me. Last question for you in our six-pack. If you had the choice, and obviously the athletic ability as well, Mike, if you had the choice, would you rather catch a touchdown from your favorite quarterback or sack your most hated rival quarterback?
Probably the TD. Just because, you know, those guys, the skill position guys get all the glory, and then you get to do, well, I guess you can do a dance after the sack, but the end zone dances to me are always, there's more options down there amongst the fans and the goalposts and all that stuff. I'd even draw a penalty for using something as a prop.
All right, bonus answer to this one, Mike. Who would that quarterback be for you? Who's your favorite? Who would you want to be on the receiving end of?
My favorite of all time, I grew up watching Randall Cunningham, so that would have to be my guy.
There you go. Mike Garofolo with us on Overtime on the NFL Files. Make sure you watch him now that he's on NFL Network. Again, congratulations, and follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me.
You got it, Nate.
Mike Garofolo, NFL Network, appreciate his time. As I mentioned, just made the jump from Fox to NFL Network, and prior to that, he had been with USA Today. So definitely moving up the ladder when it comes to covering football. Appreciate your time joining me this week on this edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week right here.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.